From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. For the past 2 months, we've been hearing about the potential impact of going off the nation's fiscal cliff. It would harm the economy and mean nearly all Americans would pay more in taxes. While Congress and the Obama administration reached an agreement this week on a tax increase for people making more than $400,000 annually, politicians put off a decision for 2 months on making substantial federal budget cuts. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis talked with Wisconsin Democratic Congressman Ron Kind of La Crosse about his decision to support the tax increases.
Well, you know, it was an imperfect solution to an imperfect process, but it was something I felt we needed to do to avert a double-dip recession. Every economist was clear in stating that if the automatic spending cuts and the huge tax increase on all Americans took effect, we'd find ourselves in a recession again, which would be the worst thing we can do as far as getting our budget straightened out. More people would be unemployed, food stamp unemployment benefits would increase, revenue would drop. The thing we need to do is sustain the economic recovery now, strengthen the economy with good-paying jobs, and then come back and work on a long-term deficit reduction agreement that will entail compromise on both sides. And over the next couple of months now, we have an opportunity to continue that dialogue and hopefully build on the bipartisan momentum that we saw here in the last week of the 112th Congress.
Is there bipartisan momentum after this?
The question of the 113th Congress, this new Congress coming in, we have a large freshman class, and I had a chance to meet with a lot of the new members already. They strike me as very pragmatic and more reasonable. We just can't afford to have more people coming to Washington with this it's my way or no way at all attitude. We have divided government, and by definition then, if anything is going to get done, it's going to require compromise on both sides. And we saw a little bit of that now with this fiscal cliff negotiations from the Senate and the House, and it's exactly what it's going to take as far as a budget agreement later on in the year. But listen, this is not easy. If it was easy, this would have been done a long time ago. And both sides need to understand they're going to have to give up something at the end of the day for something to be accomplished. And I feel that to do this the right way, we have to go and look at the big spending categories, which is rising health care costs and defense spending. And I believe there are reforms we can make to save money that will not jeopardize our national security, that will not jeopardize the quality health care that Americans need in this country. But we also need to be smart in doing it, too, so that we don't jeopardize our ability to remain innovative and competitive and creative in the world economy. And that means maintaining important public investments in key areas of education, job training, basic and applied research, infrastructure development, broadband expansion, renewable energy development. This is the seed corn that we need to be planting as a nation to stay creative and competitive in the world. So I hope through the course of these deliberations coming up that we're not eating the seed corn, which are typically the programs that are slated first for the deepest cuts in any budget agreement. So we need to be smart as we move forward on this, too, and we don't shoot ourselves in the foot.
What are the highlights of what has been approved so far?
Well, I think the president campaigned for the last year and a half on the proposition, and I agreed with him, that it's not right, nor is it defensible, that we have multimillionaires, multi-billionaires living in this country paying a lower effective tax rate than most working families. So the most wealthy in our society are going to be asked to contribute a little bit more. And I think that is fair, and it is reasonable, and they can do it, again, without jeopardizing economic growth or crucial investments in this country. But there was a lot that wasn't done, John, especially surrounding a long-term deficit reduction agreement. And that's where we have to get back to work right away. Take advantage of these 2 months now, because the automatic spending cuts have been deferred for 2 months until the end of February, and use that as an opportunity to continue to talk to one another and see if we can find common ground in spending reforms in the budget. And again, I've been one of the leading voices when it comes to health care reform. This is Medicare, this is Medicaid programs, to change the way we pay for it so it is value or outcome-based and not volume-based anymore. I mean, shoot, there was a recent study that came out that showed that we're spending over $750 billion every year in the healthcare system on things that don't work. They don't improve patient care. So we should be focused first on that to wring out those savings that can actually improve the quality of care by spending a little bit less in certain areas. And the same is true for defense. There's a lot of inefficiency. There's a lot of excessive spending in the defense budget that we can look to and scrub that would not jeopardize our national security. So unless both sides are willing to go to those areas, then I think a budget agreement is going to be elusive in the future.
What percentage increase will go up for certain tax rates, and how much revenue will it raise?
Well, it's going to raise an additional $620 billion over the next 10 years with the additional revenue from increasing the top marginal tax rate, you know, from 35 up to 39% for the wealthiest 1.5% in this country. Also, the capital gains and dividend rate increases as well, from 15% where it's at now up to 20%. And that's where most of the wealth is being accumulated by the most wealthy in this country. I mean, that's why people like Mitt Romney, like Warren Buffett, are paying an 11, 12% effective tax rate when most other families are paying a 20 to 25% effective tax rate, because their wealth is tied up in investments. And so the capital gains and dividend rate increase really affects that type of population more than working families who aren't getting wealthy through their investments. And I think that was an important correction, because that's one of the greatest contributors to the wealth disparity that has developed throughout the decades in this country, that the wealthy are investing in these investment vehicles, and yet the capital gains and dividend rate has been at such an historically low level that their wealth has been growing exponentially, and therefore they haven't been contributing as much to the overall well-being of our country. And I thought that was an important and significant change. But there's still a long ways to go as far as the difficult decisions that have yet again been deferred. And if this was easy, again, this would have been done a long time ago. And both parties need to be realistic, including on the spending side, the Republican Party. They just came off a national campaign, you may recall, that criticized Democrats for taking $700 billion out of the Medicare program and promising to restore that money, while also promising to increase defense spending by $2 trillion over the next 10 years. Well, those are two of the largest spending categories we have in the federal budget, and my Republican colleagues were promising to spend more money in these areas. So they need to be more realistic in what their expectations are, because the math doesn't add up based on what they're trying to promise the American people.
So this bill bought 2 months on spending cuts. What happens in the next 2 months?
Well, hopefully a lot of communication takes place. It doesn't end now and we sit around and wait until the last minute, and then you have 11th hour brinksmanship and holding the economy hostage again. I hope that's not what plays out here in the next 2 months. So there is some time to hopefully reach some agreement. And I think both sides have motivation to do it, because the spending cuts have to be applied equally. A 50% cut in defense spending, a 50% cut in other discretionary programs such as health care, such as education and workforce development. So both sides, I think, have a dog in this fight. And so there should be some motivation on both sides to try to work out some agreement to avoid just the across-the-board indiscriminate cuts that are called for right now. But the other big item that's going to be coming up almost simultaneously is the debt ceiling. And I hope that my colleagues don't use that as some bargaining chip, because I don't think it's a smart national strategy to do that. It's as if they take a loaded gun and point it at their own head and threaten to shoot themselves, because that would be a true fiscal cliff. If the United States of America decides to default on our financial obligations for the first time in our nation's history, that would cause an economic depression in our country and a global depression virtually overnight. And it would be a self-inflicted wound. So I hope that's not something that we're going to see a repeat performance of, like what took place about a year and a half ago.
Is entitlement reform on the table here, Ron, or can that be handled separately?
Well, entitlement reform does mean Medicare, Medicaid, and that's health care spending. And that's where we need to continue to change how health care is delivered and how we pay for it, so we're getting better value. So, yeah, and my Democratic colleagues, I would submit, need to understand that there are areas of saving money in these crucial programs, but without jeopardizing the quality of care at the same time. I fear that too many of my colleagues say there can be no cuts in Medicare or Medicaid. Well, I don't believe that, because there's, again, tremendous amount of waste and inefficiency, the overutilization of tests and procedures and things that aren't improving patient care that we're spending money on. So there are ways of reducing spending in these so-called entitlement programs, which is health care programs, but without jeopardizing coverage or quality at the same time. And healthcare spending is the largest and fastest growing area of spending at all levels, in all of our budgets. So, yeah, we have to be willing to talk about that in a sensible way without just shifting costs onto the backs of people who can't afford it. So I think, yeah, we can strengthen and modernize Medicare, Social Security, for instance, but without putting these programs in jeopardy for people who need them.
It sounds like you're prepared to support spending cuts. Is there anything that's off the table for you?
Well, again, you don't want to draw any red lines right now, John, because that's not conducive to healthy negotiations and discussions. I mean, if everyone came in with their "you can't touch this" attitude, then things break down very, very quickly. But again, I hope we're being smart in our approach to it, because there are important investments that we need to be making as a nation in order to keep the doors of opportunity open for all Americans. The greatest economic challenge we face today is increased global competition. How we respond to that will define who we are as a nation in the 21st century. I don't think our response should be drastic cuts in education funding or workforce development issues when our citizens need global skills in order to compete effectively. And we have a crumbling infrastructure. There's no way we're going to be able to sustain increased economic growth and job creation unless we have an infrastructure that's capable of supporting that type of growth. And that, too, will create jobs in the short term. So, yeah, I mean, there are areas of the budget I think we should be willing to fight for and do our best to maintain investments in. Otherwise, we're only harming ourselves in the long run.
Wisconsin Democratic Congressman Ron Kind of La Crosse voted this week to support a tax agreement that will raise rates for people earning more than $400,000 a year. The plan helped avert part of the so-called fiscal cliff. Congress has 2 months to agree on federal government spending cuts that were delayed as part of the tax agreement. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Steve Roysom, Mary Meehan Stroub, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.